Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
Welcome back into the Eric Ainge Show, live from Rusty Wallace Kia of Knoxville, I-75 Callahan Drive. Listen. They're not deferring payments. They're not doing all that. You know, you see a lot of ads for that. These guys over here are going to make your payments until 2021. Jake, call it Jake No Bull. It's a real deal. He's going to make your payments until 2021. And you get a 200,000-mile warranty on all new Kias here when you purchase a Kia here from Rusty Wallace Kia of Knoxville. And they have rock-bottom prices on all their pre-owned vehicles that they get from trades, from people coming in to take advantage of this great deal. And if you want, you can just do it all online. You can do it over the phone. And I'm looking at a really full lot because I'm actually out here. I don't know if people, you know, we talk about it all the time. Brian seems to have handled it better than I did. I'm not going to last much longer if I'm just in the garage all day, every day doing the show. That's just not ideal. That's not for me. So as someone who is as social as I am and extroverted as I am, I have to be out and about, mingling, doing shows. Pretty soon we're going to get up to the Tri-Cities and we'll be doing shows up there. I know there's a bunch of people that are listening right now on the Sports Monster up there. And just, again, really, really excited to be out and about. And we're following all our rules and doing everything that we have to so we can do this. And just appreciate everyone's patience as we I've done what we had to do to keep broadcasting and sounding the best that we can.
Again, I'm so locked up in the studio, man. You're lucky you're out and about, seeing people. Well,
You know one thing that you got today. You got Chef Scott Whitaker's wings.
Dude, can I have like a couple seconds just to tell you what all I just ate?
I'm eating it right now.
Oh, did he bring it to you?
It is the best chicken wing I've ever had.
That chicken wing.
Life.
So Will came on. He said, hey, this chicken wing, this might be the best chicken I've ever had in my life. And I a little exaggeration, whatever. And I'm like, okay, I've been in that chicken wing and I swear this is probably the best piece of chicken I've ever had in my entire life. It was phenomenal.
It's hard to put into words. I mean, it is literally the best chicken wing I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah. So Jeff Scott, he's the man,
Thanks for hooking that up.
Yeah, for real.
You know, we were talking earlier, and you can let me know whenever we get the Reister back. But we were talking earlier about Jamie Newman, Georgia football. What's it going to look like this year? It's not a stretch for me to say, like when I say this, I'm not being a hater saying that Kirby Smart has had trouble with the quarterback room or different things like that. I mean, he had a five-star quarterback in Jacob Eason, and then he had Jake Fromm come, and then Jacob Eason left, and then Jake Fromm stayed. Justin Fields got there. Justin Fields wasn't happy. Justin Fields left. I'm not only going to blame that on Kirby Smart. I think in the world we live in now, Kaner, I think it's really, really hard to have more than, and obviously Justin Fields was not wrong sitting there saying, I am capable of being better than this guy.
Well, you saw that last year.
You saw what he was capable of doing at Ohio State. I mean, he was a Heisman Trophy finalist, for crying out loud, in his first full-time year as a starter. So I don't think it's realistic to have more than one of those kind of guys on your team at the same time. I think you can have an older guy like that, you know, like if there was more of a difference, more of a separation in years between Fromm and Fields. At the time, it was only a year. You know, he's only a year older. So that's not that doesn't work. You know, like you got, okay, Tennessee's got this highly touted kid coming in, Harrison Bailey. Everyone thinks he's already going to play next year. I'm telling you, that's not going to happen. But nevertheless, he's a highly touted kid that I think has a really high ceiling, and he's shown that he could be a really good player. Then you have the guy who, you know, regardless of what people want, Jared Garantano is probably going to be your starting quarterback. And then you have a couple guys in between. I think that's more of a realistic quarterback room to keep and to manage than it is to have these highly touted guys. I mean, look anywhere, man. When you have a guy that goes somewhere and there's a five-star in front of him, one of the five stars leave. It's rare that you have a roster where you have more than one five-star caliber quarterback on the team at the same time. You could point back to Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa as a, and maybe, I mean, that's the exception. I mean, and Jalen Hurts still is getting love for it today because he didn't just leave. He left the year late, a year later.
He graduated.
Yeah, he left a year later, but he did stay a year when most other people in his situation, as like a two-loss, two-year starting quarterback,
yeah,
would have left.
And then look at Alabama. Needed him. I mean, probably wouldn't have won the SEC championship without him.
Well, what happens last year if Tua Tagovailoa goes down in the Tennessee game and then Jalen Hurts steps in for a few games? They definitely don't lose the Iron Bowl. Who knows where they get? They still probably don't beat LSU. But
was it Mac Jones threw two pick sixes in that game? And they still lost by three, scoring 45 points. I mean, if Jalen Hurts in that ball game, you're definitely not losing.
No, you're definitely not losing that one. But yeah, my point is, I just don't think it's realistic in 2020 to have two 5-star caliber quarterbacks on the roster at the same time. So we'll see what happens with Georgia. But you know, when you watch recruiting and you look at transfers and all that kind of stuff, every head coach is trying to hedge their bets. And oh, by the way, regardless of whether JT Daniels gets a waiver or not, putting all your eggs in the Jamie Newman basket, the kid could tear his ACL the first time he runs out there on the first play of the game. No coach goes into a season saying, well, I got this one, so I'm good. I mean, look at how many Power 5 football teams every year have to go to the bench. Not because of how bad, you know, how a guy's playing, but because they have to go to the bench. I mean, it's rare that you get guys that just play every snap all year long, don't get bumped out for a head or an ankle or a knee or this or a shoulder or that. I mean, you have to have more than one quarterback if you want to be a championship caliber contending football team. Anyway.
Well, I agree with that. I would say this, though, and I certainly don't have a problem with you keep recruiting quarterbacks and keep signing the best guy you can get every year. I think you absolutely should. It's not going to happen every year because of what your depth chart looks like, and I'm not going to argue with ever bringing in a grad transfer quarterback. I think where the Georgia situation surprised me a little bit was looking at who they have on their roster and who they have, you know, who they're chasing on the recruiting trail. It surprised me to bring in a transfer, even though he's potentially a really good transfer. Potentially, maybe he's not as good as he was advertised. We don't know. For me, to bring in a quarterback transfer, I need a little more certainty about him than JT Daniels provided. That was my only point. I understand you always want to add because you're always one turned ankle and one disgruntled guy away from having a real problem at quarterback. We've seen that here as much as anywhere. I was surprised by the timing based on what you know and don't know about his career, that JT Daniels is a guy to put in that situation. But hey, he could prove me wrong. He could come in.
Well, and I don't even know that Kirby's any more confident necessarily than you. I'm just saying from all the defensive coaches that I've been around. I mean, offensive coaches too, but all the especially defensive minded coaches that I've been around, they are always going to be prone to the guy that they've seen play. Because yeah, they can. So the fact that Kirby has seen film on JT Daniels, even if he's still unsure about him, he sees a high ceiling. Therefore, that he wants it because he's seen it. It's tangible. He understands what he can do and what he can't do and what he needs to improve on. When you recruit a high school kid, I don't care how good they are in high school, aside from, you know, an occasional Trevor Lawrence or one of these kids that comes out that you just know there's zero chance they aren't amazing, that's rare. Yeah, that's very rare. So they like it. It's almost like Kirby's going, listen, JT Daniels, is he better than the redshirt freshman on my roster? I don't know. But I have no idea how good that kid is. At least I know how good he is. That makes me stress less. I want him on my team.
There's a question in this whole situation that I desperately want to ask you, but it's going to be in Would You Rather, so we will talk about it after Would You Rather, because you'll have to give the short answer there. But we'll save more of the Jamie Newman and JT Daniels situation for after that, because I want to save it for that, but I think it is really compelling how many questions this opens up for Georgia. If he's eligible, if he's not eligible, I thought this was a curious move for JT Daniels to make, period, but especially to go to Georgia is very interesting. But, you know, we spent a lot of time earlier this week talking about transfers and guys not always finding the right spot. I think when you're a transfer that will likely only have 2 years to play and will likely have to sit out this year, the list of teams that are interested in you is not as long as JT Daniels probably thought it was when he decided to go in the portal from USC.
I mean, going to Georgia is no slouch. So.
Oh, absolutely. It was about finding the right situation. And don't get me wrong, he was looking at LSU, Tennessee, and Georgia, among a few others. I'm not saying he didn't have high-level things. I just think in his mind there was probably even more demand than there actually was, or than he actually found when he went in the portal.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, Jared Garantano ranked the number 19 quarterback in the country by Pro Football Focus. Too high, too low, or just right?
I think so. I think the Jared Garantano conversation has to start with which JG are you going to get? Do you get early season JG or bowl game JG, because that was a similar player? Or do you get mid-season, towards the end of the season, Jared Garantano, middle of the season, 2018 Jared Garantano? In the last two seasons at quarterback here at Tennessee, he's played games where I would say he looks like a first-round draft pick. And he's played games where he doesn't look like he should be the quarterback on the field. So somewhere in between that ceiling and that floor is the player that you're going to get. And I think we've talked about it a ton. I think a lot of the mistakes that he has made, unfortunately, are at times or in games where he wasn't allowed to make any. And that's not necessarily fair to put on it. I mean, he throws one pick against Georgia State. He throws one pick against BYU. He fumbles the ball once in those games. And that's the margin of error early with where our football team was at. He just wasn't allowed to make mistakes. And then you go to Florida and he makes a couple bad ones, and you're going, we can't win like this. Well, you can't win with anything else we had either. That's important to state, and that was shown throughout the year. But you still have to have really good quarterback play, and Jared has shown that his ceiling and where he can play can be. I mean, the reason I thought he was going to look like I thought he would look like he did in the middle to the end of the year all year long.
Right.
And had he looked like that, then everything that I said about the kid would have been true. I mean, he would have thrown he'd have been a 2,500, 3,000-yard passer. I mean, he'd have thrown, 25 touchdowns, 30 touchdowns. Who knows how many he would have thrown. We would have won probably 9 football games, and everyone would feel drastically different about him. But people still are kind of confused a little bit because you just don't know which one you're going to get. I don't know which one you're going to get. I have an idea on what I think you're going to get, but I think when metrics look at him, the kid's only thrown, in his career, 11, 13 interceptions? If you look at 2018, 20, and 2019, he's thrown 11. He's only thrown 11 picks in 2018 and 2019 combined.
And it's why he's so frustrating, is because you see somebody whose MO is not turning the ball over, but then when you think of some of the moments you think of, particularly in losses, it was turning the ball over or missing just that. It's the great debate isn't the right word. It's the great frustration with Jared Garantano's career to this point at Tennessee is that, the thing that he's known for not doing, he has become known for doing at the worst time possible.
If you took, and I don't even know that's fair either. I mean, he made that terrible decision. He made one terrible decision against Alabama. He didn't play good. I don't care who the quarterback was against Florida that last year. We weren't going to beat them. I mean, Kyle Trask, we all had to guess on how good he was actually going to be as the full-time starter. We watched against us that he was – I mean, he's probably the best returning quarterback in the conference this year. And we just you went into that. If you'd have known that Kyle Trask was Kyle Trask, then you never would have given us much of a shot to beat him last year.
Right.
So, but if you're giving me Auburn 18, Kentucky 18, Jared Garantano, Missouri, Vandy, Kentucky, 2019, Jarrett Garantano, South Carolina, 2019, Jarrett Garantano, then I think every Tennessee fan listening right now would agree, if that's the kid you're getting, give me that kid. Because that kid's the national player of the week. Even in 2018 and 2019 combined, two years of him playing, starting, coming off the bench, different things. In conference football games in two seasons, Jarrett has thrown 17 touchdowns and 6 interceptions against conference football teams. 17-6, basically a 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio. That's really good. That's really good. Against in games we've won, here's a stat for you. In games that we win where Jarrett's playing, he's thrown 18 touchdowns and only 4 interceptions. 18-4. When we win, he plays good. When we lose, he doesn't. He's thrown 10 touchdowns and 7 picks in games that we've lost. So that's a lot of pressure on him. But at the same time, it is what it is. Now here's where Jarrett needs to improve. And part of this, I think, he'll be a benefactor of just playing on a better football team. Against ranked football teams over the last 2 years, Jarrett has thrown 5 touchdowns in 2 seasons against ranked teams and 4 picks. Against unranked teams, now a lot of those are still conference teams, still good football team. Against unranked teams, he's thrown 23 touchdowns and only 7 picks. So Jarrett is good enough right now on this team to beat any unranked team. And we saw that last year. I mean, look at the middle to the end of the year. We're playing unranked conference football teams, and he's lighting them up. But against ranked teams, 5 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. So is Jarrett good enough this season to be the guy that continues on the conference against conference teams, 17 touchdowns, only 6 picks? Is he good enough to get better at that and improve that? If he better be, because in games we win, he's thrown 18 touchdowns and 4 picks.
When we come back, what are the metrics that make him the number 19 quarterback, and what can he improve? How can he use those to improve himself and become more consistent overall? We'll get to that coming up on the other side. This is the Eric Haines Show. 15 turnover-worthy plays. They qualify turnover-worthy plays as those where the quarterback's actions directly led to a turnover. If it takes them away from situations where a quarterback threw a ball that hit the receiver in the hands and it popped up and was intercepted.
The first interception at Florida that bounced right off Juwan Jennings' face mask and right. Got picked off in the end zone.
It's throwing a catchable ball that was, through no fault of the quarterback's, intercepted, whatever. It still hurts you if the defensive back made a great play, something like that. But they do these slightly adjusted statistics that are based on.
And that's not that's not a lot of plays.
Right. They do a lot of different adjustments to stats that kind of put a metric on how pro football scouts evaluate college players, and then they bring it to the masses. That's what Pro Football Focus does. Some of their metrics I agree with. Some of their metrics I don't think translate to the game of college football as well as they translate to evaluating where a prospect stands going pro. Regardless of all that, that's how they come up with these numbers, not my opinion or their opinion. I'm mixed on their methodology. I see where they get it. I don't always agree with it. Still, I do think when you're evaluating a quarterback and how you project him to play next year, those turnover-worthy plays is a good way to project it because, well, when everything went right after the ball left his hand, he puts you in a position to win more often than not and more often than most quarterbacks. And according to this stat, more often than every quarterback in college football that's thrown 500 pass attempts.
And that's kind of why people like me that watch him play go, or Jeremy Pruitt that watches him play goes, man, I can win with this kid. What the problem is when you play a game like we did early in the season, where right, wrong, or indifferent, you're in a really tight ball game. You can't miss a corner blitz off the hash get hit in the back and fumble the football in your own territory. That's a turnover-worthy play.
Yes, it is.
You can't throw the ball to the other team. That's a turnover-worthy play. You know, the one thing that this stat doesn't go, and I think most people, if you said, what is the thing that bothers you the most about Jarrett Garantano? Because if you're telling me turnovers is the thing that bothers you the most about Jarrett Garantano, then I would challenge. I'd say, well, then what else do you want? I mean, because listen, Brian Maurer was not the answer last year. Brian Maurer threw the ball to the other team a lot. They dropped some of them, but you saw when he came in the bowl game, he threw the ball like four times, and two or three times the other team touched the football.
Yeah,
that's not okay.
And I think the difference is it's what you expect from a redshirt freshman or from a true freshman in his case. It's not what you expect from somebody further along in their career. I think with Jerry Garantano, people just expect him to be farther along in his career, and there are all sorts of reasons that he's not. Some people look at him as excuses. I say they're legitimate reasons, but I'll equate him with, and I know there are all sorts of other connotations with this, and I don't want to go down the wrong road. On the field, he reminds me a lot of Arian Foster, where his ceiling is so incredibly high. His ceiling is Arian Foster running for 2,000 yards in the NFL. But people here remember him for the few fumbles he had, because the few fumbles he had came at the absolute worst possible time every time. But for his career, he didn't fumble the football as much as other guys he played with at the time that people shouted should be playing more over him.
Well, especially for how often he touched the football. I mean, for the amount of carries and receptions that he had, he really didn't fumble the ball that much at all. But you're right.
Again, was lower than guys he played with and some of the greats that played before and after him.
Yeah, and Jarrett's games last year were that he really did. So you can't count Indiana against him because the kid played good enough to come back and win the football game. And that's quarterbacking. Quarterbacking is playing bad for three quarters, missing guys, being late, throwing interceptions, and then with two drives to go in the football game, you go and you just absolutely cut it loose and you go win the football game. Is that ideal? No. Does any head coach want to win that way? No. But that's what happens when you're the quarterback playing this game. Football is not a perfect game. So, like, I don't count that one against him. The Georgia State turnovers, the BYU turnovers, the Florida turnovers, those games got – and again, I don't know that you beat Florida even if he's not turning the ball over. And again, one of the interceptions wasn't his fault. The other one was just a terrible read and a terrible throw. But even in that game, Jarrett made – most of the throws he made were really good. When he was playing early, most of them were really good. He missed the tight end, and then he threw an interception. And so it's like – you go from watching it going, man, he's really not the problem right now, to two plays in a row where you go, oh, my gosh, what is he doing? And that's the frustrating part with Jarrett. And I believe, and I've said this 100 times, and I've talked to him and everybody over there, I believe that because he's a smart kid, Jim Chaney overestimated how much he could put on the quarterback. And then he watched early, and they struggled in those early games to the point of having to put somebody else in. And then when he came off the bench, he was coming off the bench with a game plan that had been formulated for a true freshman or a redshirt freshman quarterback. Right. And when he came in there with the simplified game plan, which Tyson Helton did a phenomenal job of doing for him last year, the year before, I mean. And when he came in with that game plan and was doing what they would have been doing with the other guys, and he was able to just keep it simple, throw guys open, and he knew exactly what to do on every play because it was the first couple pages of the install book, he played lights out, and won us football games. And then with an entire month to prepare for an opponent, they probably got a little too complex and had him doing a little too much again, and they had to relearn in that football game. We need to simplify it again. Just call the simple stuff and where he knows what to do with the ball no matter what. Even if that's throw it away or take a sack or whatever, he knows what to do. You're going to end up with the football at the end of the play. I think you saw that. I think the reason to be excited about Jarrett, yeah, you know, there's the Pro Football Focus stat where you sit there and you go, okay, he's you know, only had 15 turnover worthy plays and over 500 pass attempts. That really is remarkable. That being said, What about the times where he's late? What about the times where he's got a guy open and he misses him? How do you fix those plays to where you have all those that few turnover-worthy plays, but how do you get those other ones that you missed or that you were late on? Well, that's what you hope to accomplish in a second year with a coordinator, because for the first time in his entire career as a fifth-year senior, he's got the same football coaches, same quarterback coach, and the same coordinator for 2 years in a row. And you saw it. I would be jaded if I was a fan and you never saw it figured out last year, but you watched it in the middle to the end of the year to the point where he's got 300-yard receivers against Missouri for the first time in Tennessee football history, and they figured it out. They figured it out. So, therefore, why couldn't they figure it out for an entire season? That's what I would say.
Well, and that's going to be the challenge going forward, and that's where he's going to have to prove to a lot of fans, myself included, that when they make it more complicated, he's able to execute it this year. I think there's some evidence that he can, and then there's the concern that he can't. How well he's able to progress and show that progression in the first three games this year is going to be a huge factor in how people feel about him long term and how Tennessee's season goes next year.
Bottom line is you got to put the guy out there that you think gives you the best chance to win. And for the most part, Pruitt over his 2 years here has thought that was Jared. There was times where he wasn't sure last year, and when he realized that he didn't have the answer anywhere else, he went right back to him. I believe you'll see the same thing this year. The difference is there's not another year to play quarterback. So by the time you get to that midpoint, you know, through game 3 to 4, 5, 6, if it's not him, then you have to prepare for the future and you have to go a different direction. That's the thing is Jared doesn't have a 12-game season this year to prove it. He's got a 5 or 6-game season to ensure it. And I think he knows that. And everything I've talked to him and seen, he's working on consistency and he's trying to take that next step. I don't see why it couldn't happen, but like you and everybody else, I'm very anxious to wait and see if it does.
Need to see it. We'll take a look at one of his teammates getting some draft attention already this year next on the Eric Haines Show.
The great thing about sports is it never stops. Here's another 60-second sports minute on the Sports Animal.
Eric Haines with the Midday Sports Minute. The Lady Vols will play West Virginia during the SEC Big 12 Women's Basketball Challenge this season. The date and time of the matchup have yet to be determined, but the game will take place in the WVU Coliseum in Morgantown. Lady Vols have a 6-0 record against the Mountaineers, with their most recent win coming in 07. Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced pro teams and outdoor stadiums can host fans up to a 25% capacity in the state, while indoor facilities must still play without fans. The IndyCar Series is set to open up the season at Texas Motor Speedway on June 6th, but track president Eddie Gossage said, despite the new rule, the race will still take place without fans. Meanwhile, Virginia's governor said Thursday that racing will be allowed at Martinsville Speedway on June the 10th. As for last night's race in Charlotte, Chase Elliott took on the checkered flag, Denny Hamlin the silver, Ron Blaney the bronze, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and Kurt Busch rounded out the top five. With your Midday Sports Minute, I'm Eric Kane.
In with a first-round grade this year.
Trey Smith, I thought last year would have been a first-round draft pick if all the stuff around him in the conversation wasn't blood clots, health, that kind of stuff. If you just watched his play on the field, he is by far one of the 32 best, most NFL-translating-ready NFL players in college football. He was last year. So he definitely is this year. You know, the thing that's so good about Trey is not just all the intangibles, the leadership, the person that he is, all that kind of stuff. You get a day one NFL physic from a physicality standpoint, from an ability standpoint. You have a guy that you can plug and play on day one of training camp as a rookie. And that's rare. You know, it's kind of like you get a 5-star offensive lineman. Are they day one ready in college football? Most of them aren't. Some have to be, you know, and even then there's a learning curve. Even most rookies at offensive line, they're not plug and play day one ready. Some of them have to play, but you still have to take your lumps. Trey would be fine. Now, he'd be as good as any of the veteran guards that were out there playing. I mean, he's that just from a physical standpoint. I mean, have you ever seen a guy just toss people? And the only guy that I've ever seen that just manhandle guys like he does was Aaron Sears when he played here. Yeah. Other than Aaron, we've had good linemen. We've had guys that are first round draft picks. We've all that kind of stuff, but we have not had a guy that just from a just physical standpoint in a one-on-one matchup just doesn't get beat. And Trey's that guy.
Yeah, he doesn't get beat, and that's what's going to make this offensive line so good this year is him playing like that and being a guy that doesn't get beat. Cade Mays, if eligible, is a guy that doesn't get beat. Brandon Kennedy at center will know everything there is to know about the offense as a sixth-year guy. And then you have other guys who have played a lot of football on that offensive line. If you have a line of five guys who just aren't going to get beat most of the time, you're going to have a opportunity for your quarterback to sit back, read the field, and figure out exactly where he can take the football. And conversely, you will also have running backs who know where their hole is going to be, will have offensive linemen that understand the proper leverage to make sure that hole opens and stays open. This could be a really, really exciting time for Tennessee's offense if they all play up to their billing.
If you want to make if the conversation for our football team next year still remains, well, we'll only be as good as the quarterback play can be, then you have to be able to run the football. Because, right. I mean, that's like I remember playing as a true freshman, and the only reason I was able to play at a high level as a true freshman was because we had 2,000-yard running backs. Why? Because right. We had a really good offensive line. You can if you can run the football and you always win the numbers game, and when it's all even, you're making yards. The quarterback game is really not that complicated. When it gets hard is when you can't run the ball, and they don't have to blitz to put pressure on you. You know, like a lot of the time that Jarrett's been the quarterback here, it's under pretty tough circumstances. Honestly, you're not able to run the ball that well. You can barely protect even when they don't blitz, let alone when they do. I think that this coming year, the fact that the strength of your football team is the offensive line, that makes everything so much easier. And then you have guys at running back that can make guys miss. They can make you right even when you are wrong. The only question is, can we separate at receiver and can we get open? But when you're playing against single high coverage, it's a whole lot easier to separate when you're not getting double-teamed everywhere you're running around. I mean, remember last year for so long, we had Juwan Jennings, torching people, but Josh Palmer and Marquez Callaway outside weren't producing a lot. They weren't getting a lot done. Well, it's because teams played cover two against us, and they rolled corners up on the outside guys and had two safeties over the top, and there's not a lot of pass plays that are good when you're getting double-teamed and forced outside every time.
Right.
So – yeah, you have to if you can just run the football better last year. If you're just better at running the ball, and more of a threat running the ball, then they got to rock one of those safeties down in the mix. They got to stop playing that the pass coverage they're playing, and it makes it that much easier for you to have success outside. And when we were able to do that later in the year, you were able to see just how much easier it is to go play. Gosh, I mean I remember playing in games where we couldn't run the ball, and guess what? I didn't have a very good day at the office.
Right.
And nobody does. Peyton didn't. Brady right. doesn't. I mean, it's just how it works. So I think having Trey Smith as a potential first-round draft pick, I mean, you have other guys that are NFL-caliber guys like Kennedy and Mays. And then your tackles are going to be young, but they're not going to be too far behind on the success rate. They're just younger. The sky should be the limit for the offense this year with all the same, for the most part, you have some different coaches, but the same continuity within the coordinators and most of the position coaches. And it's just, I don't see a lot of reason why they shouldn't be successful. You could even say it all starts right there with big number 73 anchoring that offensive line.
Rusty Wallace, Kia of Knoxville is where we are for today's Eric Haynes Show. We'll tell you more about what they have going on. We'll talk to Jake coming up here. To start next hour, we wrap up this hour of the Eric Haynes Show next. Knowing there was going to be a reduced season and a strong likelihood that there would not be fans in the stands, agreed to take prorated salaries back in March, and now the owners have come back on that, and everybody's starting to look bad. The owners are starting to make the players look bad. The players coming back to the table with one of the most prominent agents saying, don't bail them out. The games can't happen with you, which unfortunately, I think because they've already agreed to a much lower deal, and now the owners still want to redo it, I think the players are in the right here.
I just have a, like, with everything going on, I think having sports is so important, and having baseball is really important, especially in a lot of different parts of the country. I mean, baseball is king. I don't know where you go from here. I'm sure you've had relationships or different things in the past where, like, you look at it and you go, I don't know how it got here, but it is. And this
I don't know how you fix it.
Yeah, at this point, I don't know what do you even do? Is it even worth doing anything? Like, I don't. Of course, it's worth finding a way. It's Major League Baseball. It's not like it's going to just poof disappear and not exist anymore. But gosh, at the same time, I don't know if you're representing the players. I think you sound like Scott Boras, and you say, don't bail them out. What they're doing is not okay. And then if you're the owners, you're going, well, we don't want to completely lose all the money. You know, it's hard because they're billionaires in their personal lives.
Right.
And that's what makes it tough. But I also think that, you know, they're running a business, and they look at paying just the prorated salaries with what they have left, and they're probably all going to lose money.
That's the player's point right now, which is when revenues exploded over the last 4 years, because the collective bargaining agreement was in place, they didn't see a bigger piece of the profits. So because of that, and that's the agreement that they made, and they didn't ask to redo it in the middle of the boom. But their point would be, hey, we stuck to the agreement when it benefited you all. Now you all need to stick to the agreement you made when you're the ones that are getting hurt and we're the ones that are going to take a bigger slice.
Yeah.
So I agree with them even more when you put it in that context.
I mean, it's just, bottom line is you have two different groups of people that are looking out for number one, and I think that's, I don't necessarily think that's wrong, but it's not conducive to them getting together to play baseball.
Yeah.
So, again, like I said, I don't know where you go from here.
And I'm with you. I think if they don't play in the midst of all of this, whether you support the players or you support the owners, it's going to be hard to rally support for baseball going forward whenever it does return. We'll return with another hour of the Eric Haines Show. It starts with Would You Rather next.